the waiting, the worrying, the rest of their lives. Two mothers whose children survived the recent tragedy at Stoneman Douglas High School join us to share what they went through, how they're doing, and where they'll go from here. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
From NPR.org, how school walkouts test students' rights and school responsibilities. There's a lot of stuff to talk about here, Tim.
There's a ton of stuff to talk about here.
Because it's not just the side of good or bad, this is the punishment, that's the crime.
Right.
It's like, how do schools deal with all of this?
Right. Think about it. So we're coming off of the first walkout for violence or violence in schools, where students across the country went and walked out yesterday. And the issue at play was, so how do schools respond? And so in this article from NPR, which is a very informative, nicely, objectively written piece, it lays out like going, this is not necessarily a simple type of thing going, wait a minute, you can't punish kids for walking out for, quote, the right reason, or the opposite, you can't punish kids because you feel like they're walking out for the wrong reason.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, and this is what happened when this got announced, is that there were various types of responses, whether it be a Twitter response from a superintendent in Texas that talked about a 3-day out-of-school suspension for anybody participating in this, to some saying, yeah, we're not going to do anything about it. The reality is that you can't do either of those as a building administrator. So we have to look at this and talk about it for real, because we do have an issue here of law, which is schools are responsible for the safety of children during those hours, and loco parentis.
Yes, okay? And if the kids are in the school, it's the school's responsibility,
right,
to keep them safe.
Right, and so as an administrator, when I hear that people are walking out, I have to say, you're not allowed to do that, because if something happens to you, it's the responsibility of the school. So I can't knowingly allow you to walk off of school property during school time. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Got it.
That doesn't mean, though, that students can't walk out and protest, because then somebody comes back at, and they point this out in the article, what about students' First Amendment rights?
Right.
Right? And as was found in the Supreme Court way back, students do not give up their First Amendment rights when they walk into the school building. They just don't. So the students have First Amendment rights. So but what is a First Amendment right, and what is walking out, and is walking out of school during school hours an expression of First Amendment, or is it a disruption to the activity of the school? Technically, we have to look at this one and say, it's not a First Amendment exercise when you break the rules of the school and walk out and disrupt the current happenings.
Yeah,
the
right.
Curriculum, what's ever going. Okay. For example, but the other part of the First Amendment, when we come back at this, was back in the Vietnam time, wearing a black armband, okay, to show some type of support and or not support for, you know, that's a First Amendment free speech right, and schools can't tell you you can't wear an armband.
Right.
Because that's not disruptive.
Right.
It's not taking out the day. Right. So this gets really mixed and interesting. However, what I like here is that it's not necessarily an article where we say, this is what you should do. If this happens, this is what you shouldn't do. If this happens, it's just laying out there and going, it's tough. But what I like really most importantly about this, though, is to point out the fact that if there is a rule for skipping class that says you get a detention, and if the following day you skip class for a student walkout and the principal decides they don't like the walkout you supported and gives you a 3-day suspension, that's a problem, because the rule that needs to be followed is the rule for walking out of school, which is a one-day detention. So just looking at this and looking at the walkouts, it's good to get a sense of saying, where am I? Because as a parent, I know your kids are asking, I'm going to walk out tomorrow. My principal said I'm going to get in trouble. Or my principal said I can go there. I can do this. So take a look at this NPR.org article. Get a sense as to the reality of the situation schools find themselves in, building administrators find themselves in, students who participate, and parents who are in this. Because the more you know on this, the better off you are, because it's going to be happening again March 24th and April 20th, and who knows how many more times in between.
From edweek.org, student walkout taps well of anger, mourning over gun violence. In their most dramatic display of civic activism by American students in recent memory, tens of thousands walked out of their schools Wednesday and took part in somber, politically charged demonstrations marking the February 14th shooting that killed 17 educators and students at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida.
And it was a major national walkout, whether it was Chicago, whether it was in D.C., whether it was here in Madison, where we record Busted Pencils, students literally walked out, went and made either their voices heard, silent demonstrations, mourning, you name it. They were out there doing this. Mm-hmm. The idea of seeing students civically active really bothers some people because, of course, they're too young to have their own civic.
They don't know what they're doing.
They don't know what they're doing. We've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. We're moving on from that and saying, no, okay, look, they did it and there are more planned. One of the biggest issues, though, that they all have been talking about, particularly the Stoneman Douglas students, is gun control. I mean, this is an issue. So people are saying, you know, yes, it's an issue of gun control. And they're very much behind the idea that we want gun control. In fact, one student, though, not from Florida, but in Montgomery County, right outside of D.C., I want to just quote him. He said, "To start, we will not sit in classrooms with armed teachers. We refuse to learn in fear. We reject turning our schools into prison. We will accept nothing less than comprehensive gun control. The adults have failed us. This is in our hands now." Okay.
They certainly did that yesterday, didn't they?
Didn't they do that? And so,
well, and it's interesting, too, because it people in the legislature and all these people that want to make the rules and regulations, it's like we've spoken about before. They're not the ones sitting in the classrooms.
Right. And this idea, too, of being to sit in your classroom in fear, I think some people are going, well, look, statistically, it's still really almost a negative impossibility, right? Mm-hmm. But the reality now has hit that it doesn't feel that way to students. They are saying, I feel like this could be me next. In fact, we're doing drills. And as they're having active shooter drills, and legislatures and politicians and pundits are all putting forward their ideas to fix things such as arming teachers, you know, more security, passports to get into the school, metal detectors. They're like, no, it's school. I want to go to school. I want to feel free. I want to feel safe. And I don't want my teacher to have a gun
right,
and possibly shoot one of my
friends.
Mm-hmm. You know what, students? Rock on. Keep it going. We look forward to more.
From theatlantic.com, what I saw treating the victims from Parkland should change the debate on guns. As I opened the CT scan last week to read the next case, I was baffled. I thought I knew all I needed to know about gunshot wounds, but the specific pattern of injury on my computer screen was one I had only seen once before.
Wow.
There's a lead for you.
There's a serious lead. And in fact, getting into this article here, written by a doctor that treats gunshot wounds, and talking about the specific differences that typical bullets from one type of gun to another gun, specifically here the gun used in the Parkland, Florida shooting, the AR-15, and talking about the damage done by a bullet coming from that gun as opposed to even a 9mm handgun. It almost, when you go through this and read this, the 9mm handgun wound sounds like, yeah, I could deal with that.
We could, you could survive it. It's good.
In fact, the doctor even says, look, despite hitting like a vital organ and destroying it or a main artery, that survivability with a 9mm gunshot is typical.
Right.
Because the reason is the low velocity of the bullet as it travels through the body and the fact that it doesn't tear and destroy and fragment the bullet, which and then comes out an exit wound that's essentially the same size as the entry wound. Now, this may be getting way beyond our ability as radio people to be in a medical discussion about gunshot wounds. What I do think is important, though, is when he does tell us about that bullet wound, but then differentiates what happens with an AR-15 bullet.
Well, the way he's described it, it's so easy to picture, and you just kind of, you shiver.
Right.
Because he said it's so vastly different than a handgun. An AR-15 passes through the body like a cigarette boat traveling the maximum speed through a tiny canal.
And that line, I can't...
Whoa!
Yeah. Think about that, right? And so what that really means is all of that wake that's caused when you see that, quote, cigarette speedboat flying through a tiny canal, that's the type of wake that an AR-15 bullet creates as it goes through the body. Mm-hmm. And so that reverberation out, as he said, the organ could be not in the path of the trajectory of the bullet, and still the damage because of the percussion, the wave effect, mm-hmm. can still destroy the organ or the artery, not from a direct hit. And that was one of the comments in there was, is that you can be killed more often from the AR-15 with a non-quote lethal shot more often than even what some might say from a 9mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So here he's saying, like, look, there's no debate here as to whether, from this doctor's point of view, should we ban the AR-15 high magazine capacity gun? Because according to the doctor, when you look at the damage, this is not a hunting, this is not a target gun, this is a killing machine.
Time for Tim to rant. This is Someone Has to Say It.
Gun control and crazy people. On my Facebook page, I posted the other day a quote from Paul Thomas. The quote was simply, "Ultimately, we must resist the fatalism that gun control will not work or that there is nothing we can do. I cannot stress enough that other countries have effectively curbed gun violence and school shootings," end quote. That was it. I put it up on my Facebook page and boom, the crazies came out. Because how dare I put a quote about gun control on my own personal Facebook page when the facts about gun control, according to others, are clearly indisputable. The fact is that the Second Amendment, according to people on my Facebook page, is not an amendment at all, but a commandment given by God that they will always get to carry their gun regardless of what I have to say. In fact, at one point, I even tried to point out that I might like to think that I have a right to have a sense of safety and that my life matters, in which I got a response from one person telling me that, Tim, you might need to check into a psychiatric ward at that point. All right, this is a big issue here when we talk about trying to have a real conversation about gun control. People are passionate about this issue, and I get it. What I don't get, though, is the fact of how fervent some people can be about this issue. When we talk about violence, when we talk about safety, when we talk about freedom, when we talk about rights, all of these things are not clear. They're not without their gray aspects. And so if we're going to talk about guns, we can easily also talk about regulations. It's not that hard to do. Let's move this conversation beyond crazy Facebook rants. I'm right, you're wrong, I'm right. On this issue, particularly at this point in time, if we can't agree that some form of a common sense gun law is something that we need to all get behind, then we all are crazy. On the phone with us right now are mothers from Stoneman Douglas High School,
Rosemary Jensen, Kathy Rush, thanks for coming on to Busted Pencils with us.
Sure.
You guys, you know, have the unfortunate title of being parents who witnessed firsthand what happened in Florida almost a month ago now. And Rosemary, just give me a sense of that day, what happened. And your son was in this, and your son's fine, correct?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
I'm very fortunate. Yes, he is. Mm-hmm. I had just gone to the copy center to pick up posters for the theater department, and I had headed home to pick up Valentine's to deliver back to the school to put in teacher boxes. And as I walked in the door, it was, I don't even remember, 2:20, and my phone dinged, and I looked down, and it was Connor, and it just said, "Oh, my God, Mom, code red, I hear gunshots outside."
Jeez.
And at about the same time he texted me that, I sat down on the computer, and I kind of threw it up on Facebook. Hey, guys, everybody else hearing about this code red, not really thinking that it was real. And as I'm doing that, my phone blows up. I'm a booster president for the drama club, and my co-president calls me, and I answer the phone, and she's screaming on the phone. And I'm saying, I talked to Connor because I knew her daughter and my son were in the same drama class. I'm like, he's fine. He's fine. Let me text him. He's texting me. And I wrote him, "Is Mackenzie with you? Where are you?" And that was all. And then he didn't respond. And so now I'm telling my girlfriend, okay, he stopped responding. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why. I just didn't believe it. Like, I just didn't really believe it. And I think part of it was that we had been discussions like 2 weeks ago on Facebook locally about code red drills, and some parents were concerned they were going to do the full-on SWAT team come in, shoot rubber bullets, and I was like, there's no way they're going to do that. But then I thought, well, maybe that's what they're doing. But my girlfriend's on the phone screaming, and she's not calming down, and she hangs up on me. And now I'm just kind of – now I go on Facebook, and it's just exploding, and my phone's exploding, and I don't even know what to tell you. I just know I kept texting Connor, please answer me. Connor, please answer me. Where are you? Please answer me. And then I just texted him, I love you.
Wow.
And then I waited. In my house. I don't know why I didn't go to the school. It's literally a 6-minute drive from my front door to the school. And I thought, I don't know what I thought. Tim, I don't even know what I thought. I just think I was kind of like going, this couldn't happen. You know, it was kind of one of those things. And I waited 57 minutes. And when I'm on Facebook trying to see if other people are getting information. And another parent whose son was with my son, I knew in the same class, he was getting some information. So I thought, okay, then they're together. And then about 57 minutes later, he wrote me, goes, okay, Mom, we're out. We're running. And I'm like, I just got in my car. That's when I got in my car. And I drove as close as I could get, which wasn't close. It was probably, I don't know, I don't even know what that is, like a half a mile, Kathy, from home, from the school to university.
Right.
I don't even know what that is. And I just, you know, I got up there, and I'm on the corner, and there's so many people, and the news trucks are already there. They're already there. And I'm standing there, you know, trying to figure out where he is and how to get to him because the police wouldn't let us go past a certain point. And my dad taps me on the shoulder. My dad was there.
Mm. Okay.
And we waited. And that's, you know, and my girlfriend Kelly, who's the co-president, was calling me crying. And she had gotten right to the school. So she was literally right on the outside of the gates. And she was just screaming, you know. She was crying, and it was really upsetting. It was just still I didn't believe it.
Right.
You know, I can't even tell you how how unbelievable it was.
I can still, I can still sense that in your voice. Now, mm-hmm. Kathy, I mean, how different was your experience? Mm-hmm. I mean, when this happened, and do you have a son or mm-hmm. a daughter that was there? Or?
I have two children there. I have two sons, a ninth grader and an 11th grader who were there. Mm-hmm. I was at work. I work at a high school in Davie, which is about a half an hour south of Stoneman Douglas High School. And I got the news at work in the form of a phone call that my middle school son, the middle school was on lockdown. And I didn't think anything of it because we do these drills all the time. It wasn't a big deal. But then somebody called me, a girlfriend of mine called me and said, oh, no, it's the high school. And she says the SWAT team's on their way there now. So then I go out to the office area outside of the school clinic because I'm the school nurse there, and they had it on the computer, and they had it pulled up, the news that everybody was at the high school. So they said, oh, my God, Kathy, go. Just leave. Go get your babies. So I jumped in my car. I had communicated with my one son who evacuated to the Walmart, which I find out the next day that's where the shooter went also, to the Walmart, which I didn't know that at the time. I was worried about my other son, my ninth grader, who was still inside the building under a table in the TV production room. I was worried about that son, and it like breaks my heart now that I was worried about the wrong child. I should have been more worried about the one that went to Walmart. He was right there in the mix with the shooter. And I flew up the highway all the way home, and I still didn't realize the magnitude of it until I'm driving 95 and now being passed by, I can't even tell you how many police cars, ambulances, SWAT mm-hmm. vehicles, passing me. And I began hyperventilating in my car. I couldn't breathe. I was literally screaming in my car as I am passed by hordes of police cars. And I come out of my car, get off the highway, tumbled out of my car, and a friend of mine picked me up, hugged me, and somebody snapped a picture of me that so many people have seen across the United States, a picture of a red-haired woman with a ponytail being hugged by a blonde woman with an ash on her forehead. That's me, the red-haired woman with the ponytail.
Wow.
That's how I was. When I was literally screaming in my car coming home. And it was just, I had no idea the magnitude of it until I saw that many police vehicles.
When were you able, Kathy, to know that your ninth grader was okay?
Well, initially he texted me when I left my work around 2:52. He texted me. Mm-hmm. And he said he was safe. He was hiding under a table in TV production class.
Okay.
And I guess I didn't. Time doesn't work normally in this situation. I thought it was a half an hour that I hadn't communicated with him, but I looked back in my text messages later. It was a full hour before I heard from him again.
Well, that's
a full
very
hour, and yeah. It's horrifying to not hear from your child in that situation for a full hour.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can imagine just the idea of knowing what you both just described is happening truly in their school where their children are, and then being in contact and then not being in contact for an entire hour while this is happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rosemary, you said 57 minutes. Kathy said it's an hour. And just the anguish, as any parent who's listening is, as you're describing it, it's unimaginable.
You know, it's funny because Kathy was driving, you know, and I'm telling you, I can get from my front door to that parking lot in 6 minutes. I do it every day. You know, and I don't know why I didn't get in the car, but when I'm in the house, it's funny that she says that because then it jogs my memory. And the police, the sound of the sirens, because I have this is a very small city. Like, it's small. Like, so, you know, the police, the fire and the firehouse is right by my house, and the sirens and the helicopters. Like, it's the sound of helicopters. I don't know that I'll get over that because that was the sound that, like, I kept, like, I knew it was serious kind of when I started hearing helicopters, like, numerous helicopters over my house. And so,
yeah, there were so
I don't know
many.
What
so
made
many.
Me not get in my car and go down there. I really don't. I don't even know what I was thinking. There were so many people calling me that were, like, screaming and crying that I almost felt like I couldn't do that. Like, I know from my friend Kelly, I'm like, breathe, Kelly. You know, our police officers on campus. You know, I'm sure it's just a, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I literally was trying to calm people down, you know, and I don't think I gave myself a chance to really get scared, until he stopped responding. And then I literally just texted him, please, Connor, just write me back. Please, if you're okay, please write me back. And that, you know, my friend Kelly's calling me, screaming that she's seeing kids running out and she's looking for our kids and she doesn't see them and there's kids with blood on their shirts and oh my God, Ro, and then she's hanging up and that's when I got in my car. You know, I was like, I didn't even turn on the news at that point, but you know, I'm on Facebook and I'm literally my phone and my Facebook messages and people are calling and it's just, you know, you get down there and there's like so many people and you're just waiting, you know, I'm just waiting for him to write me and say I'm out, you know, and
We are talking to Kathy Rush and Rosemary Jensen, both mothers of high school students from Stoneman Douglas. This is a month later, but here we are now, you know, almost truly a month later, and I guess the question is, you know, Kathy, how are you doing?
I'm doing better. I can't say that things are good. I'm doing better. My kids are back at school. Things are kind of, there's, you know, things that set me off now. I was walking my dog the other day. A police officer drove by. I waved at him. He waved at me. And I just started crying for no reason. Things like that. I think a lot of people are going through that where they're just triggered by something odd and they just start crying. And it's just a sadness that has kind of washed over our whole community.
Rose?
Yeah. God, Tim, I think there's a sense for me that somewhat denial. I'm not even going to lie. I mean, I think that's how I cope is just kind of, I mean, I'm thankful, so thankful that Connor survived. But, it's just, it's surreal. There's definitely like this cloud that just hangs over you every day. You have to drive to the school and it's, you know, and I've been there to hang banners. I've done a lot to try to, you know, support the school and be there. But it's just a really, I don't know. It's a really.
It's interesting that you say that. I've heard from a lot of people that say it's surreal or it doesn't feel real.
Right.
And I think everybody deals with things differently. Because for me, oh my gosh, it's very real, very, very real for me. And I think about it all the time. And I just, I don't know, just to live it. Is unbelievable and just very real.
Right. And it's real, but I don't even know how to describe the feeling. Just this feel, the sense of like gratitude, the sense of, you know, I think for me, anger is probably the dominant feeling I feel. That's what I think I feel more than anything. I am so angry. You know, I think that's just what keeps my one foot forward. You know, my son is very rational about it and way more rational, I think, than most adults and is coping rather well.
Yeah, that was going to be where I wanted to ask you how your son and how your, you know, but all three of the your children are doing. So Connor, you said, is dealing with this more rationally than you, Rose.
He really is. He, you know, he was across. So his drama room faced the 1200 building. So as they were running out towards, you know, he was saying they ran out and the drama teacher had said that they saw the BSO officer on the corner and they thought, oh, it's just a drill. And then they turned around and came back in. So they were facing the building, so he really was hearing shots. Like I, you know, first questioned it, but now I know, yeah, he was definitely hearing what he was hearing. But I had asked him, like, the night before, going back the first time, like, we went back on the Sunday, the reunification day, and it was great. He saw his teachers, and he was kind of ready to get back. And I said to him, are you fearful? And he said, Mom, I'm not. He's like, I'm not fearful. He's like, I wasn't afraid before. He said, and I'm not afraid now. He said, there's so many police officers and people. He's like, but when you have weapons like this, he said, sometimes bad things are going to happen, and sometimes you're just not going to be on the right end. He said, he goes, we know our protocol. We had a protocol. We followed it. I think that saved a lot of lives. And then he said, and we'll know what to do the next time, which is frightening when your kid says that to you. And he said, and you just hope that you are not in the wrong place at the wrong time. He said, and that's, you know, he goes, and that's how I approach it. He's like, it's tragic, yeah. And it's awful. He said, but I don't think until these weapons are not on the street that this is not something we're not going to see again.
Kathy, how about you?
Mm-hmm. My kids seem to be doing better than I am. They seem okay. They don't really want to talk to me about it.
Right.
But it's interesting what Rosemary just said about her son saying, oh, the next time. Because mm-hmm. a friend of mine, her son, when she was talking to him about it, he said to her, Mom, that's just life. And these things really bother me because for our kids, that is just life. I didn't grow up with these drills, code red drills, lockdown drills, shooter drills. And our kids are growing up in this world now where this is just life for them, just normal for them. And for me, that's not okay with me.
Mm. Right.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, as I listen to you describe that, the way your children, and I'm thinking, you know, I have an 18-year-old and I have a 15-year-old, and, you know, they've been talking about it in different ways, but this idea of normalcy that, you know, code redding and being ready and, you know, the next time is just, what a horrific statement that our children are kind of moving on to almost like some kind of rational acceptance of this distorted reality. That
how much have they seen it? So, I mean, 2 weeks before this happened, I was having these conversations about these stupid code red drills. Honest to God, I was having these conversations because I had gone to see one of my former colleagues. I taught kindergarten, and she was saying, oh, we did the code red, and she teaches kindergarten. I'm like, what do you mean you're doing a code red? I said, what are you doing with these five-year-olds? Oh, well, the girls and I go in one bathroom, and the boys go in another. I'm like, by themselves? She's like, yeah, and they're told to lock the door and don't open the door until someone breaks it down. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at her thinking, I didn't do this. I mean, I taught 20 years ago. We weren't doing these drills 20 years ago, 15 years ago, not even 10 years ago. I mean, people are saying our kids grew up with it, but really it's only been in the last 10 years, maybe. You know, my kids were in kindergarten here. They didn't do code red drills, neither one of them. So it's kind of insane that this is that we're all like okay with this, that we're like, yeah, we're gonna, you know. And that's what I say to people. I'm like, okay, so we're drilling kids on things because we think they're going to happen, even though statistically, I mean, and I'd be the first one to say statistically it's not going to happen most places, and I would have said of any place it wasn't going to happen it wouldn't be here. But this is our reality. Like, and so how many 5- and 6-year-olds are going to bed every night terrorized? Like, this is their new fear. Like, the one place that you should feel safe at school, they're not, because I don't even know, because weapons are so easily acquired, you know, that this can happen. And, you know, again, like, you know, Connor, I was saying, well, you know, do you think they should do this? And he looked at me and goes, Mom, he's like, okay, so they make the fences 12 foot. Well, the next time, he goes, this shooter, he goes, ran out with people. Mm-hmm. He goes, what if he had taken a gun with him and nobody could jump the fence? He goes, because a lot of people, he goes, me included, probably couldn't climb a 12-foot fence. He's like, now we're fish in a barrel. Wow. He goes, then what happens that time? Do then they take it down after that? He goes, it's the weapon. Nobody needs a his stance is nobody needs a military-grade weapon, period. You know, because he's like, okay, so now the next time he gets on the school bus or he goes to the movies or he goes to the concert, you know. I mean, my daughter was at UCLA when they had an active shooter on campus and did the whole lockdown thing, and I thought I was one and done, you know. So, I don't know. I just think it's, you know, this weird this weird obsession with these are human killing machines. This isn't hunting. Totally get hunting. My dad has a rifle. Totally get wanting to have a handgun to protect yourself in your house. I don't get wanting or needing to have weapons in the general population that are literally meant to liquefy organs and just, kill indiscriminately. I don't. I wish I could understand it, but I don't. And, you know, now we're living this trauma that nobody should have to live through, that no community should have to walk through, that no kid, you know, should have to have as their memory of their high school years. I'm like, this is just horrific, and it makes me so angry, you know, that this is the reality, that this is, you know, we're going to normalize this. We're not going to address the root problem. We're going to do all these other things, but they're not really addressing the root problem. So,
well, that is, I mean, you just laid it out there. And, in fact, listeners to Busted Pencils, when we get back, Kathy, I want to touch base with you again on this issue. And then, though, I want to come back and let's talk about it. I mean, we're hinting at, is this a gun problem? What would you like to see done? And, you know, what do we do in the aftermath? And hearing from two parents, you know, what do we say? Gun control, teachers with guns, 12-foot fence, all of those issues are going to be...
Where do we go? That's a very good question. What she was saying before about these particular guns that are now, you know, so hot in the media, we're talking about them. She's right. They are not for home protection. They're not for hunting. It ruins the food. If anybody's read some of these articles that have been put out from doctors in the hospitals and the radiologists, the ER doctors that have taken care of these patients, these people are shredded. This gun is used for hunting people. Our children were hunted in their high school, and it's unacceptable, and these are not needed. And anybody that's going to defend their right to an AR-15, I'm sorry, I have a problem with these people, because our children's lives are so much more important than their, you know, killing weapon, their killing machine.
Rose?
I agree. I just, you know, to me, you know, when you talk about root issues, root problems, it's these type of guns. And I don't understand in this country why our children's lives aren't more valuable than owning a weapon that's purely for war, mass deadly killing, not for hunting. Again, my dad has a rifle, totally down with hunting. I know people who do it, you know, and like my dad's always said, you just need one good shot. And that's what you need, you know. And if you want to shoot these guns off, because I understand they're fun. I mean, Rambo looks like he's having a great time. Have them at gun ranges where you can go rent them out for a half hour on the range and shoot them off. But this whole thing, well, you know, law-abiding people, well, you know, they're only law-abiding until they're not. And then they're deadly, mm-hmm. you know. And I don't, yeah. you know, I just see other countries have addressed this. You know, they didn't have like 40 mass shootings. When they address this, you know, they had one and they addressed it, you know, and we just keep having them. After Sandy Hook, like, to me, that was the tipping point, you know, which I guess was a tipping point in the UK. There was a, you know, 20 years ago, same thing. There was a shooting in an elementary school, 17 people, 5 and 6 year olds, and they changed the laws, and they haven't had one since. And same with Australia. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to take, you know. I mean, we had 50 people in Vegas and, you know, over 400 injured. I mean, what is the apparently this is the acceptable loss to people who think they should own these guns. Like, that's like, you know.
People need to understand it wasn't just 17 victims here. This wasn't just 17 victims.
Right.
There were 17 additional people that were injured by these gunshots, one of which is still in the hospital. Four weeks later, this 15-year-old child shot 5 times. He is still in ICU in the hospital, plus their families, the families of all these 17 injured plus 17 killed, plus the hundreds, literally hundreds of children and teachers who had to see this and hear this and walk over blood when exiting the mm-hmm. building. There are so many more than just the 17 that
Absolutely.
Were killed. It's
right.
so much bigger than that.
Right. The casualties there are just, yeah, as you just said, we forget about the casualties of the witnesses that they had to go through, the parents living through this again, dealing with talking to their kids every night before they, you know, go to bed and as they head off to school. And it's just the first responders, the doctors.
I mean, there were so many people that, you know, saw things that they just never thought in their lifetime they would see. And people, you know, I even in this community, like I said, it lasted 10 days, and then all of a sudden, I saw people on groups here, you know, defending, you know, well, you know, the Second Amendment. And I'm like, really? Like, really? You're going to actually go there? And I just had to take myself out of groups because I can't even entertain that anymore.
It's true. I don't understand how people – I understand that there are some very responsible gun owners. If you are a responsible, reasonable, trained gun owner, why would you ever have a problem with safer, common-sense gun laws if you are a responsible gun owner? Why would you have a problem with that?
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Well, and people do.
So let's make a shift. So adults seem to, as we pointed out, not seem to be willing to do much. But, the Stoneman Douglas High School students have really inspired quite a bit of movement around the country. And is that hopeful?
Oh, yes.
Kathy, go ahead.
Oh, yes. It's so hopeful. These kids are amazing. The speakers, that they're so articulate, they're so intelligent, and it makes me angry when people, you know, say bad things about them or disparage them in any way, because these kids they went to a really good school. This is a public school, but it's an excellent school. These kids are well trained. They understand how our government works. They understand TV production because they have that class. They understand journalism and newspaper, and they understand all of this, and they're using their resources to make a difference now. And I think people need to listen to them because these are our lion cubs and they are roaring and we need to listen.
Yeah, I agree. I think people underestimate, you know, our teenagers, you know, for what they've been exposed to, how media savvy they are, how their social networking is way more advanced than, you know, most of the adults in the room. They've been taught to support arguments. You know, we have a great drama program. We see a lot of drama kids who are not afraid to speak and speak with passion. And, you know, it really bothers me when I know these kids. I mean, I'm the drama booster president, so I know a lot of these kids. Plus, I answer phones and guidance. So I've seen these kids come in and out. And, you know, Kathy's sons are in TV production. So, you know, David, you know, used to video. You know, I'm sure they'd like to get back to doing, like, normal teen things, like, you know, videoing, you know, the astronomy club like David did before and all these other, you know, and they're media savvy, and I think they're loud, and I hope that they can, their voice is continued to be supported by adults, and that we listen to them, because I really don't feel the legislature listened to them. They heard them, they didn't really listen to them. So I hope this march, you know, and their connections, you know, with students across the country can carry this forward. I mean, they're going to be voting. Most of them are 18. Some of them are soon to be 18. I think, you know, I'm hoping this is their I hope this is their time to kind of change things. It always seems to be the kids who spark the change. I think this might be, you know, one of those times. I hope it is.
Well, I definitely hope it is, too. And, you know, Rosemary, Kathy, thank you so much for your time sharing such, you know, incredibly personal, frightening, horrific moments with us. And for all of you out there listening, you know, whatever we can do to support the students now, as a Busted Pencils listener, let's make sure, let's get behind these rallies, whether they're April 20th, whether they're March 24th, whether they're whenever they are, let's make sure that we're out there supporting. And Rosemary Jensen, Kathy Rush, thank you so much for your time.
This question seems more important to ask now than ever. John Havlicek is a teacher and active union member from La Crosse, Wisconsin. He joins us now for his take on the Alfie Cohn question. What are the schools our children deserve?
Our kids deserve great public schools that are fully funded, that help push them to be the most successful that they can possibly be, whatever their walk of life and whatever their starting point.
Time now for our weekly salute to historian and activist Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
The power of a bold idea, utterly publicly in defiance of dominant opinion, cannot be easily measured. Those special people who speak out in such a way to shake up not only the self-assurance of their enemies, but the complacency of their friends, are precious, catalysts for change.
My special thanks to Rosemarie Jensen and Kathy Rush. I know that it must be very difficult to talk about that tragic day at Stoneman Douglas High School, but it is so important to do it so we can understand it better and work to stop it from ever happening again. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Thanks for Busting Pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk, Busted Pencils Radio.